Friends, I'm starting a bit different on today's episode because I have something important to tell you. About 6 months ago, NAM approached me about bringing my podcast, By Faith, into their growing podcast network. They knew I'd announced to you that this season of By Faith would be my last, but they said they want a podcast just for ministry wives by a ministry wife, basically what I've been doing this whole season, and they asked if I'd simply continue what I'm already doing, but with their help. Long story short, I said yes. So By Faith lives on, my friends. Well, sort of. The podcast will get a new name. It will be called The Ministry Wives Podcast with Christine Hoover, but it will be the same format you've come to expect from me. Personal, vulnerable, relatable, and truth-filled interviews with women all across the spectrum of ministry roles. I'll be wrapping up this season of By Faith in early May, but look for new episodes of the Ministry Wives Podcast with Christine Hoover in late summer. I am really excited about this opportunity, and I hope this gets you excited as well. Okay, friends, let's get to the show for today because I am thrilled to share this interview with you. My guest is Christina M. Christina is a social worker and speaker and is married to Daniel, the lead pastor of Beulah Alliance Church in Edmonton, Canada. Daniel and Christina have three kids and they host the M Between podcast, that's I-M for M, a podcast about marriage and parenting. And so I asked Christina to join me to talk about raising PKs. We've all heard those horror stories about pastors' kids who rebel or grow up to hate the church and God's people. So I think we all tend to worry a little bit about raising our kids in the ministry. I asked Christina how she is purposely seeking to give her kids a healthy perspective on church, how she seeks to protect them from some of the hard parts of ministry, and what rhythms she and Daniel are building into the culture of their family to help her kids grow up to thrive. So here, friends, is my conversation with Christina M. Welcome to the By Faith podcast, Christina M. So glad to have you.
Thank you so much, Christine. I am so honored. I'm so glad we're able to connect over Zoom.
Me too. I mean, we've been trying to do this for a bit, and I'm glad it worked out for this time. And I'm really excited to get to talk to you about a subject that I know everyone, every pastor's wife is so interested in, and that's raising kids in the ministry.
Mm-hmm. Very true. And you know what? I was just thinking back as I was looking over the questions that you had graciously sent before, just remembering the good times and the tough times. And honestly, our oldest is 12. So if you had asked me 11 years ago, or you have told me 11 years ago, you're going to be on a podcast talking about this, I probably would have laughed. I mean, like, what do I have to say? All I'm doing is changing diapers. Like, there's not much glory to this at all. So just seeing God's faithfulness in all the seasons, I'm just, honored to be able to share God's goodness.
Well, tell us first about you, your family, where you are, your context, and also I'd love to know what you enjoy doing in terms of ministry.
Sure. So my name's Christina. I was born and raised in Canada, but have lived pretty much all over the world and ministered in so many different contexts with my husband, Daniel. We've been married for 16 years. And when we got married, we lived in Canada. We've moved overseas and done ministry there. We recently in like COVID terms, like 3 years ago, we moved back from Nashville to come to Edmonton to do a succession process with a pastor who has been there for over 30 years. Wow. And the church that we're actually serving in now just recently celebrated their 100th year. So there is a long history of the way that God has been moving in our church in Edmonton and in the lives of the people that we're so graciously being able to serve with. So we have three kids. Our oldest is 12. Our second is 11. And our youngest is 7. And now we have a double doodle. We have a COVID puppy, like maybe so many of you do. And she just recently celebrated her first birthday.
Oh, good. Happy birthday to the puppy.
Oh, thank you. We all made it.
So what do you... Okay, so first of all, is Daniel now... Has he taken over as pastor, or he's still kind of as the apprentice, like coming along and preparing?
Right. Yeah. No, he's taken over now. Okay. The succession has happened. It'll be a year this May.
Okay.
So it was a beautiful and hard journey. I think a lot of the stats say the hardest part is really the pastor who is leaving because there's just like you're basically seeing and saying a long goodbye and letting go of so many things. And this pastor and his wife, we knew them beforehand. They are so humble and so gracious and have been so good to us. They still continue to attend the church that they served at. And they are just beautiful, beautiful people, just a wonderful ministry couple that we really look up to. So I know that's not everybody's story. And succession is not easy, especially during COVID. Like, who does that? But we're thankful for the ways that God really guided both our families through it. Mm-hmm.
Tell me how you view your role as the pastor's wife. What do you do, or how do you, you know, view that? I'm wondering how you engage the church, in other words.
Yeah, for sure. So as you had heard before, my oldest is 12. And so we actually served in this church beforehand when our oldest was 8 months and we were pregnant with our second.
Okay.
So if you had asked me before what sort of your role is, I would have been completely lost because growing up in ministry, I always saw the quote unquote pastor's wife helping in children's ministry. And goodness gracious, thank you, God, for all the people who are called to children's ministry. But that was not me. I was like, I see children enough, actually 24/7 in my own home.
Yes.
So I didn't really want to venture into that, but I didn't know where else to serve. So that first year we were there was really, really difficult and really, really lonely. To give you a picture of the church, we have three services, multi-campus, multi-generational, multi-ethnic. And so it's a larger church where if you want to go and hide, you can. Okay. And if you want to serve, there's always a place to serve and you can. Coming in, I felt completely overwhelmed. And at the time, for whatever reason, just the culture wasn't necessarily like all the pastors' wives get together and get to know each other and whatnot. You really had to either fend for yourself or to try to find your people. And that first year, I really, really struggled. And thankfully, God had given me a beautiful neighbor that we had that friendship together. And then after that, I felt called to start. My husband was the group's pastor at that time and felt called to start a young families group because there were other families that just felt disconnected. And through that, we were able to really serve together and to just live life and journey together with people in our community that had the children of the same age. And that was really where I found my community and just being able to find people to go on play dates with or to have coffee with. So that was such a beautiful time. And we're still friends with those people, even though we moved away and came back. Now, this time around, I actually, when Daniel and I were discerning the call to come back, one of the questions I had for God was, where is my role? Because it is very defined for Daniel for the next 2 years, because as succession happens, like everything is written down of this is what Daniel will do for the next 6 months. This is what the lead pastor will do. And it changes every 6 months, but there was zero written down for what the pastor's wife was supposed to do. And so I just needed something when we went to visit Edmonton to just kind of see the church again. And Daniel was preaching. I just really felt like God was telling me, you know, Christina, you remember how lonely it was to be a pastor's wife in this large context. I just want you to go and love the other pastors' wives there and just see other pastors' kids. And that's just, that is what I'm asking you to do. And so after that, I was like, you know, I know how to love people. I know how to just make sure that they're known and seen through like a text or a dinner or coffee together. And so that's what I've been doing as we've been here for, around 3 years now.
I love that. I also love that you just gave voice to what a lot of young pastors' wives feel, when I've actually had several conversations recently about this. They're young and they have really young kids. And so God has called them to be very engaged with their children, and which is great, but they have a desire to be engaged with the church as well, but they don't always feel like they can because of capacity, or they're not sure quite what to do because they're still learning themselves and their gifts and all that. So can you speak to a woman who's in that spot, the spot you were in, how you felt when you had those small kids and you weren't quite sure what to do, but also you really couldn't probably do a whole lot because of the age of your kids? What would you say to that woman?
I would say that you are not forgotten. I know in ministry, especially as I had said beforehand, sometimes our husbands' roles are so laid out for them. They know exactly what they're supposed to do when they enter those church doors, and they know exactly what's waiting for them from the church when they go home, or what's waiting for them when they come home into your family. So I want to remind you that even though it may not feel or look like the way that you thought ministry was, or you thought the calling that God had placed on your heart, like, God sees you and he loves you and he is there for you. And really, it is a blessing to be able to take care of our children. I know, because if you told me that when I was younger, but can you not, please? But just to be able to create an atmosphere and an environment at home that is safe from judgment, that is safe from condemnation, that is safe in terms of even the attachment that we have with our children. These are the building blocks that God is using and calling you to invest in that will be able to, it says, like, it's spiritual concept, you reap what you sow. So I know sometimes you feel so insignificant, especially if you see your husband out there every day, all day, people high-fiving him, or at least emailing him or saying hi to him at church, and you feel invisible. You are not invisible. God has given you such a beautiful role and such a beautiful calling, and you are his beloved. So hear me when I say that you are not forgotten.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I always say he won't waste those years. What he's doing in you, he's growing you, he's teaching you, he's changing you. He's giving you something to say, something to minister to others when you do have more of that opportunity. And so now you're in this new season, Christina, where your kids are a little older, so you are able to do a little bit more. And I do think, I like how you brought out that our husband's job pretty much is, it's written out. It generally stays the same throughout their career, but for women, it often changes based upon the ages of the kids. And so now that you're at this stage with your kids, I would love to know kind of, how do you think about helping your kids? Because we all have this desire to raise our kids, to love God, to love the church, to love his word, and kind of the security you just talked about. We want that for our kids. So how do you think about that as far as the building blocks, the truths that you stand on that kind of structure your parenting and helping raise these kids in the church?
Right. I think we've all remembered, maybe we've experienced it ourselves, of these horrible pastor's kids story.
Yes.
Like, they grew up in church, they no longer serve God, or someone had said something legitimately or hurt them legitimately, and they were like, I want nothing to do with the church. So I know for me growing up, I actually never wanted to be a pastor's wife. That was something that I specifically, I don't know if you did this in youth group, you did like my non-negotiable list of the things I'd pray for my future spouse. And I had actually written down, don't want to be a pastor's wife, because of all the things I saw other pastors' wives go through. Why would I ask myself to go through that? If I actually have a choice in this, why would I do that? So I think, as pastors' wives, looking back even in our past of what are the things, what are the narratives, what are the stories, what are the lies that we have believed, and how are we parenting out of that? So I think it's just really we need to take time to examine ourselves, because there are real traumas that happen in ministry. Some of the big T traumas, but I'm talking about the little T traumas of a best friend leaves the church, or the church splits, or something that affects, like, it just, the little T traumas are the places where shame can come in and can take up space and can build a home in our own lives, in our own ways that we parent or just live life in general. So I think it's really allowing ourselves to be vulnerable enough before God. And like it says in Psalm 139, search me, God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. See if there's any anxious way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. And I love that passage, because even in the beginning, David opens up the psalm in saying that, you know, God, you do know me, right? You have searched me, O Lord, and you know me. So I think that's part of the beginning of, are we parenting the way that we're parenting because we're afraid of something? Mm. Are we afraid of people making judgments on the way that we discipline? Are we nervous that people will have all of these thoughts or say something to our kids? Because I think that way we can project on our children these expectations that are actually we don't think they're right or fair. And obviously God doesn't either, but sometimes it's just a natural reaction of what we're going through or what we've been through.
That's really good.
Yeah. So the other part of that too is we've constantly taught our children that we're in a spiritual battle. Like it says in Ephesians 6, for our struggle isn't against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. And so I know sometimes it can feel like we're just coming against people, but really understanding that there are, it's a spiritual battle, and our struggle isn't just against like people, right? It's against the dark forces of evil, really. Another thing that we continue to want to invest and instill the truth is that our children they're children of God. So that works two ways. One, it means that God has chosen us as parents, but also that God is the ultimate father, and that we are, as Daniel and I are the mom and dad, that we're entrusted with this gift for as we are on earth, and to be able to realize that we need to continue to offer up our children to God. That we don't have all the answers, but he does, and that he is a good father. Mm. And so continue to tell our children that as well. You know, as earthly parents, we're going to fail. We're going to hurt each other. We're going to disappoint each other. And that happens in church as well. We're going to hurt each other. We're going to disappoint each other. But also that there's this gift that God has given us, has called us to love one another. And when that happens well, it doesn't always happen well. When it happens well, it's even a glimpse of what we're going to experience through Christ in eternity. So trying to continue to live out these spiritual truths and teach them these things. And I had mentioned it before, but creating a place where home is safe, where they are seen, where it's safe to make mistakes, where it's safe to try out new things that maybe you're embarrassed to try out in front of friends or in front of the church. And then also that we are here to forgive one another.
That's really good. I'm wondering how, as y'all are preparing the succession, how you prepared your kids. How did you talk about that? Okay, dad's about to become the lead pastor of this, mm-hmm. of this large church. And that makes you kids of a pastor. This is what your dad does. Like, how do you prepare them and communicate to them about what it is that he does, but also what you do as the pastor's wife?
Right. So when we were living in Nashville for 5 years, and that's really where the kids grew up in terms of remembered, like when you look back at your childhood memories and can only remember maybe things starting out when you started school, that's that place for them. So when we were discerning to come to Edmonton, our oldest was, how old was she? I think she was 8 and our youngest was 3. And for the discernment process, we asked others to kind of join us. And one of the pastors who had done a succession, his kids were older at the time, just said, you know, I really pray that God would reveal to you the calling that he has on your whole family, not just on dad and not just on mom, because as the children are older, they understand more. And so that's really what he prayed for us. And that's what we continued to pray for our children as we were discerning, like, God, if this is our next step, would you reveal to us that it is a family calling and how you've called each one of us individually, but also collectively as a family? So there's some beautiful stories, Christine, of just the way that God moved in their own hearts. I'll share one in particular because I think it just blows my mind every time I think of it. So our 3-year-old does not know anything about Edmonton, Canada. I was driving him to school, just him and I, to preschool, and was listening to music on the radio. And then he goes, Mom. And so I'm like, oh yeah, bud. He's like, I want to say something. I'm like, okay. So I turned on the radio and he asked me, when are we moving to Edmonton? Now we didn't talk about Edmonton. We didn't talk about anything about the succession, nothing. And I was literally like, I almost drove off the road because I was so surprised. I was like, what do you mean? And he asked, when are we moving to Edmonton? And I was speechless for a few seconds. And then I told him the truth. I said, I don't know, bud. I don't know if we're moving to Edmonton. And he went, okay. And that was it. Like, literally, that was it. And so I remember dropping him off at preschool and crying and texting Daniel. And I was like, thank you, God, in just your grace and your mercy and just the beautiful way you care for each and one of us, that you would even place that on our 3-year-old's hearts. And with childlike faith, you would just express that. Mm-hmm. So that's, yeah, I think as we were discerning the call and accepting it to Edmonton, all of us felt like God was calling us to be missionaries here. That, yeah, we are from Canada, but also above all else, we are from a spiritual place, right? Yeah. Like, this is not our home. This is our earthly home. This is not our spiritual home. And so that we can come and to minister to others. So that's that place. Now, beforehand, they're talking about when the kids were younger, when we were first here, I really explained it as, because they didn't understand, why can't they run up to daddy after kids service? And if he's praying with people, why can't he stop and just play with them? Right. So beforehand, we had talked about what it means for daddy to be at work. That some daddies go to work at an office, some, you know, go to work at construction or whatnot, but daddy actually works in the church. And we tried to explain, like, big C church and little C church later on, but that this is the calling that God has on his life. And this is what he does for work. Mm-hmm. So there's going to be times where it is more than appropriate to come up and to run up to daddy and give him a big hug. And then there's going to be other times, like if they see him on stage, it probably isn't appropriate for them to go run up and to give him a hug, right? And so continuing to have those conversations of in the ways that they're able to listen. And honestly, like, we didn't do this perfectly. We will never do this perfectly. There's times where, yeah, they did come and interrupt like a prayer session or prayer meeting. And that's okay too, right? Thankfully, there's grace. And then we just kind of talk about it. So, it's just like, we just want them to know that they are welcome in the church as well.
Yes. I love that you spoke to what we often feel is that worry or that fear about our children. I think that's every pastor's wife, we have that in common. We worry about, because we've heard the stories, like you said, or if we're moving or we're making a decision that affects them, we worry about that. Mm-hmm. And I love that you brought out that God will care for our children just as much as he will provide and care for us. So that's really good. So what do you share? I know you've said your kids' ages, 12, 11, and 6. What do you share with your kids about the harder parts of ministry? How do you decide what you share? And can you kind of walk us through that?
Yeah. We didn't share much at all when they were younger. So that wasn't something that we, younger, I'm saying like the first time we were here, so under five, we didn't say anything. I don't think they would have understood that, especially as, as when they're younger, there's a lot of concrete black and white thinking, and it's all about attachment. And so if they feel like daddy might be losing his job, then that means all of this, right? They don't understand the nuances of that. As they've been getting older, there's not a ton that we share with them either. We share broadly in the sense that we are all broken people. We are all redeemed by God if we accept him. So, but that we're not perfect. And so there are going to be people who say things that are hurtful. There are going to be people who do things that are hurtful, just like us. We do things to each other that are hurtful. We do things to each other that are not loving. And how are ways that we can learn to respond, right? We can react to people hurting us because maybe we want to hurt them back. But God's calling us to do something different, right? God is calling us to forgive even when it's hard. And so those are kind of the spiritual truths that we talk about. I can think of one instance where our daughter had gone through a hard relationship at school. A friend decided not to be her friend anymore, and she didn't really understand why. So she was really hurt by it and was crying. And so we talked about that and prayed about that. I think probably about 3 weeks later, COVID hit, you know, church shut down. There were job losses. There were job shifting. At least in our context, there was. And a friend was really hurt, who was another pastor's wife, was really hurt by what was happening. And it just seemed too fast. And I mean, all rightly so, right? And we had a talk about it, and our friendship wasn't the same after that. And I was crying one day in the morning, just reading my Bible and just weeping before God, didn't think anybody was up. And our daughter came downstairs, the one who had the issue with her friend. And she asked me, "Mommy, what's wrong? What's going on?" And I looked her in the eyes. I said, "Do you remember when you had a hard time with a friend?" And she said, "Yeah, I remember." I said, "Mommy's having a really hard time with a friend too. I wish that we could come to a place where we would understand each other, but we may never be able to at this time. I pray that we would. Maybe we won't be able to, but mommy's really heartbroken by this." And she's like, "Can we pray together?" And so we just prayed together and we gave it up to God. And so I think it's those times, like, she didn't need to know the whole context of it. She didn't even know who the friend was, but it was the moments where we are able to be broken before God and coming to God for our healing and coming to God for our comfort. Those are the things that we want to share with our kids.
Mm-hmm. I like that you're talking about emotions, letting her see that sadness. I mean, I know you didn't know she was there, but then talking to her about it when you found out she was there. And I think sometimes we feel like as pastors' wives that we have to protect our kids from all of the hard, but we miss those opportunities to help them to see how our faith is applying to difficult things in life.
Right.
So I'd love to know, could you talk us through how you help your kids with the sadness of if their friend, you know, if a family at church leaves and it affects them, it's good friends of theirs, and it's very confusing to them. Has that happened for y'all? And if so, how did you help your kids process that?
That hasn't happened to us directly, in a sense where, you know, family, friends of ours have come up and said, "We're leaving the church because of y'all." Like, that hasn't happened to us. And so I can't necessarily speak to that directly. So I know friends of ours have left because one of their children has anxiety and our church is just too large for them, for that child to go into children's ministry. So they chose a smaller church. But those were times that we were able to speak about that and come to an understanding of, yeah, actually, that's good for your family. There's also a part that, you know, God may actually be calling this family to go somewhere else, if it's a church plant or different reasons. And those are things to rejoice in. And I would hope that if it were to happen to us, that we would be able to talk as a family of, you know, seeing it as maybe that God is calling them elsewhere and that this is a blessing for that family. If it's something that's against us, like say for Daniel and I, it was something that we had done or we had said, I would hope that we would come to a, if it's appropriate, that we would come to a place where we'd be able to talk to that family, talk to the husband and wife and ask them, okay, I understand that this is something that you have against us. Is it a possibility that, you know, our kids could still see one another, can still do a play date or whatnot? And if that's no, then that's no. But I've actually, I've heard of other ministry couples where that has happened and they were no longer talking, but their kids still went to the same school. And so they had like a hash out session of, we may never see this eye to eye and we may never be great friends anymore, but is it still okay that our kids see each other? Like we want to be for our children and this relationship, this friendship between our children is good and it is for them and it is healthy. So mm-hmm. can we invest into it that way?
Mm-hmm. We've talked about kind of how do we navigate difficult things in ministry, but I think it's just as important to help our kids see the joys of ministry. Mm-hmm. And so are there specific ways that you try to open your kids' eyes up to that?
Yeah, we do a lot in our neighborhood. So, and I just think that as ministry, sometimes we can think about it as this is just like whatever we do in the church. But I think we're all called, well, I know we're all called to be gospel sharers, right? Yeah. So the Great Commission. And so how can we live a life that doesn't have like the church context and like the out of church context? Yeah. How can we just live a life that is holy and pleasing to God? And so we look for ways to be able to bless others. So if I hear, for example, one of our neighbors' mothers-in-law's passed away unexpectedly. And so we just came to the kids and we told them, and do you think there's a way that we can show God's love and just bless them in this time of grief? And so our son, who's 7, he wanted to draw pictures, and another daughter wanted to make a card because she loves making cards, and another one wanted to bake cookies. And so it was just in their own ways of loving others that they're being able to do that. So within the church context, so just same thing of regardless if they were pastor's kids or not, or we were called into church ministry or not, this is how we would do. We would just look for ways to serve and in the ways that we enjoyed as well. So both our oldest girls, they want to be babysitters. They want to be like a babysitters club kind of thing. And so they love to help out in nursery. So once a month, like I go in and I help them in nursery. And then every other week they get to go in by themselves and be with the other parents or the other nursery workers. And they just love on these kids. So just different ways to be able to be involved in just serving the body of Christ. That's really just a grander picture of what ministry means.
Yeah. Are there other ways that y'all seek to help your kids love God's church?
Yeah, I think it's, we just in ways that as they get older, I see it as that there are so many opportunities to be in church, especially as PKs and especially as being, you know, the lead pastor's kids. So there are times where they've had to be there for both services. And then there's like a worship service at night. And I can tell that they're tired. And if this is the part I'm talking about, if we are like the lens of why we do the things we do, if it's, I'm afraid that if we don't take the kids to this worship service, people are going to judge us like, oh, you're here, but where are your kids? What, they don't worship God during nighttime? They only come during the day. If I'm operating out of that, then I'd probably force my kids to come because I'm afraid, right? I'm operating out of obligation or judgment, but seeing what they need, like, hey, they've been here for like 3 out 4 hours. They just need time to rest. So it's, you know, mommy and daddy, we do actually need to go to this, but you don't need to. If you would like to stay home and rest, then you can. If you would like to come, you're more than welcome. And so being able to give them that opportunity. I will say, going back to when the kids were young, just understanding their needs and their the way that they operate. So our oldest, she didn't love being away from mom and dad. And when there was just too many people the music was too loud, the lights were too bright, she would absolutely lose it. So I didn't know this, you know, since day one, but as we were in ministry for the first couple months, just realizing like, oh, where is her threshold?
Yeah.
And I don't want to bring her to that threshold. I want to be able to help her not have to reach that, right? Because she can't self-regulate at that age. So for example, like if we had to be there for both services and then Daniel had to stay afterward and do like a welcome luncheon. So the first service, she would go to nursery. And then in between first and second service, I would love to go to the coffee shop and, you know, and bring her and meet all her friends and talk to my friends. But realizing, you know, if we have to stay here for another 3 hours, that's not the best option for her. The best option is to take her into daddy's office. Just her and I, or maybe Daniel will come too. I'll bring a snack that she enjoys and just rest for that, you know, 40 minutes between both services. And then in the second service, I'll go into the nursery with her so she doesn't feel alone. Between the second service and the luncheon, go back into daddy's office and then rest a little bit. And then at lunch, be able to, you know, go as long as she can. At the time, we only had one car, so we had to leave altogether. But if we had two cars back then, I've been like, you know, I'm going to go first. And then, you know, Daniel, come home when you're all done. So just understanding, trying to be sensitive of what your kids need so they don't necessarily, and they may anyways, but trying to make it a place where they don't see it as, oh, this is something that we have to do. Like, hey, it's a privilege and an honor to be able to be in God's house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What you're saying is just all about creating a sense of security for our children that they come first. That if they have a need, you will recognize it and you will meet it. And of course, there's going to be times where they have to adjust and adjust themselves and whatever. But in general, you've created, what you're saying is you're creating a sense of security for them and right. Seeing their needs. So I really love that. Are you, as they're getting older, how are you guys kind of making decisions about what you do expect, that there are some things that are non-negotiable with your children, that they will be at this, and this or not. And right. what are negotiable things?
So we haven't really had those conversations. I don't feel like what are the non-negotiable and the negotiable. So I guess if we were to say that, like the non-negotiable would be like, hey, you're coming with us to a service. Right. It's one of those things that, and that's regardless if you're a pastor's kid or not, like that's something we get to be as a family together. And negotiables. I think there's quite a bit of negotiables if we can come to an understanding of why, like what's the deeper reason of why you don't want to go. Maybe they don't want to go into kids ministry. Maybe someone said something really mean. Maybe they're being bullied. Maybe they feel left out. Maybe everyone looks at them weirdly or whatnot. So in those ways, I feel like that's the deeper connection point of where can we come to an understanding of each other? Because something else is going on, especially if there's been a behavior change of, hey, before you used to love church. Now you say you hate it. Is there something else going on? And perhaps that's something that they don't want to share with you, especially if I know sometimes my kids say something like, what? No way. That's wrong. Like I just shut them down by accident. Cause that's something, or I just feel offended. Like you think that about me, that's so wrong or whatnot. And then realizing, oops, maybe I shouldn't have reacted so quickly. Our kids have gone to counseling as well. So there's somebody else that they can talk to. Our oldest two are involved in a girls Bible study and a discipleship program. And so that there's other adults who are investing into their lives. So perhaps they won't feel comfortable sharing everything with us. I hope that's every parent's dream, right? Oh, I'm so comfortable. Our kids can share whatever they want with us.
Yeah.
May not always be the case.
Yeah.
And so being able to have other adults and other friends, just loving on them.
How have you helped your kids handle the pressures that they might feel, whether it's somebody saying something about being the pastor's kid or people talking to them that they don't know who they are, but the people know who the kids are? How do you kind of talk your kids through all of that?
I think it's different, definitely depending on age and personality. So for example, one of our children, he loves calling himself the lead kid.
Oh my goodness, that's hilarious.
Because they call him lead pastor and yeah. lead kid. He's only done it a couple of times. And so people laugh because it's actually really funny that he would say something like that. Also, in a different private conversation, they're like, hey, bud, like, you know, that is actually true. You are the lead pastor's kid. However, when you say it in that way, it can come across as and going through explaining. He's like, oh, he's like, but I am the lead kid. Like, yes, yeah, actually you are. However, so there's that. I mean, some kids might really enjoy that or just really enjoy the benefits that can come sometimes with being known. And so that addressing that of like, you know, our deepest desire is to be known and loved by God and to share that with others. And so if we're calling ourselves lead kid or whatnot, like, you know, Jesus is the humble king. So let's be like Jesus. No way.
That is so funny.
Yeah. And then we have, you know, the opposite where I would think there's different personalities in our family that they would hate to have the spotlight on them because that they are, you know, pastors' kids or whatnot. I do have to say that we are in a larger context of a church. And so there's actually a lot of pastors' kids and they're friends with each other. So they don't necessarily feel or see that people are looking at them because there's a lot of kids to look at in that way. I know one story that our daughter shared was there's this contest at church where every time you say a Bible verse, you get like 5 points or something into a raffle. And every month a name gets drawn out for like a gift card or something. So she had memorized Luke 2 all on her own. It was around Christmas time and just recited it. And so one of the kids who was her age said, oh, I bet your mom and dad made you do that, right? Like, I bet that's why, because you're the pastor's kid. And she was like, no, actually, I just wanted to do it on my own. I just thought it was, and she has an incredible memory. She's like, I just thought it was really fun. And so the kid was like, okay. But I was so thankful. Like, she came home and she shared with that. And it gave us an opportunity to ask him, like, well, do you feel that there's ways that we put pressure on you because of this title? And if so, what can we do with that? Because that's not what we want to communicate. That's not what we want for you, to have all these external pressures, especially from your parents. So are there ways that we can learn to continue to be with one another?
That's so good. I'd love to go back to some things that you mentioned earlier about feeling, having to recognize when you're making decisions about parenting based upon fear or that people are judging. Can you walk us through how you mentally think through that and speak truth to yourself in those moments? Because I think that happens a lot where we're very aware of what we think people think, or sometimes people even say things about what they think about our parenting or what our choices, like education choices or whatever. So how do you work through that on your own?
Christine, it's a very long process. I know, like in podcasts, I listen to a ton of podcasts. You're like, wow, this person knows so much. Like, how did they go through all of this? It almost seems like they learned this in a day, but it has been a lifelong process for sure. I am naturally bent towards people pleasing, and there's a big side of being Asian, and there's this like obligatory culture aspect that I carry. And so it is daily coming before Jesus and remembering who I am in Christ. And more than that as well is, like, both Daniel and I are involved in counseling, and we are not ashamed to say that at all. There's a lot of stuff in our past, little T traumas, as I was saying, that have happened. And so that our counselor is helping us process through. Daniel and I did not grow up in families where emotions were stressed at all. Actually, it was, you know, you better push those down unless those are happy feelings you're expressing, because we don't want to hear anything else or we won't pay attention to that. So I still feel like we're toddlers in this sense of learning to express our emotions and learning to be able to healthily express those and teach those as well. And so it's one of those things. I think as parents, we will naturally have strengths and places that we need to work on. And so it's being able to carve out time and choose those areas where we're like, God, we need your help. And also we're probably going to have to do a little bit of work. So let's do that.
Mm-hmm. I think I heard you and Daniel on the Glass House talking about this, the Glass House podcast.
Right. Yeah.
Talking about emotional, because it's so funny you use the phrase that we're toddlers in this, because my husband and I have realized in the past few years that we also are toddlers in this. And so we've been really working, also doing counseling, also working on emotional health. And so I love that you brought that up, just learning and growing as a person, not just, I think we try to do the spiritual growth, like we think, okay, I'm going to read my Bible. And that's obviously vital to our growth, but also giving some weight to the emotional health, I think is super important, especially in our parenting.
Yes, I see that. And spiritual and emotional are not, like, God's created us as whole beings.
Yes.
Right? I love in the Bible, like, even when Jesus is in the garden and he is just like distraught is not even the word to say, right? So he's showing his emotions, and like, or the story of Lazarus and Jesus knowing he's gonna raise him from the dead, and yet he is just weeping. Yeah. Like, thank you, God, for including those passages in the Bible where we can see, God's holiness and also like, well, Jesus' holiness and his humanness, so that we can relate in that way.
Yeah, that's so good. Well, are there boundaries that you draw between church life and family life that you found helpful?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't necessarily call them boundaries in that, say, we would say that they're rhythms that we have in our family. And so a lot of it revolves around like social media or answering the phone or getting up and texting, because we all know we can be readily accessible if we want to be. So our daily rhythm is that there are no phones at the dinner table, no phones at the kitchen table whatsoever. And that if we hear like a ding or a call, like that's something that we can wait until afterwards. At dinner time is family time of connecting. And then we also have nighttime devotions that we do together. So that's like I guess non-negotiable in that way, right? Uh-huh. That we do that. So our daily, and then our weekly is that we have, we celebrate Sabbath together. And so that's Fridays for us. And then Friday mornings, Daniel and I have a date morning together. And then in the afternoon and evening is when we do family time. And that's, we're off our phones, we're off social media. Like, we are not accessible, which was really hard to do at first. I remember it was, I think maybe the second Friday that we did this in the beginning. And there was an emergency at church. Like, something had happened with the pastor, needed to, like, a microphone broke or something like that. And he was texting furiously to Daniel. And I was like, babe, are you going to answer that? Like, he seems really stressed. And Daniel said, you know, if I answer this, then I'm the person that he's going to continue to call if something happens.
Yeah.
He's like, he's like, I'm not the only person on staff. Like, he can figure this out. He can do it. And, you know, the next day when Daniel checked in, he's like, yeah, you didn't answer, so I had to go call somebody else. You're like, oh, actually, that's good. You found a way to be able to solve that issue. I am not the problem solver of all things. And so that's the weekly that we do. And then twice a year, Dean and I actually take off by ourselves, thankfully. And so we invest into our marriage that way. And then twice a year, we actually do something as a family together. It doesn't have to be a big trip. Just maybe we'll go to a cottage or somewhere, you know, an hour away from us and just be together. And that's the same thing. We are not accessible for any of that stuff. Now, I share this, Christine, in terms of the rhythms, because those are the natural things that we've put into place in our family. Are there going to be times where there's exceptions? Yes, there are going to be times. For example, we had a staff member pass away unexpectedly, like overnight, and we found out in the morning, and the funeral was going to be on Friday. but Friday is our Sabbath, right? If we were legalistic about it, we'd be like, we're not attending the funeral. We can't do the funeral. Like, too bad we can't come. That would be really hurtful to everybody.
Yes.
And so, so on Friday, we decided to celebrate Sabbath and keep that on Sunday instead because of these plans. But if you don't plan for anything, everything is going to come.
That's right.
Family time's not going to happen. Marriage, times together is not going to happen. But if we have these rhythms in place, the extra stuff is the exception. Our family isn't the exception.
Yes. So good. So good. What you're saying is gold. If people will, we hear these things a lot, but it's the practice of them.
Right.
Actually putting it into place that is so hard for so many people, but what you're saying is so good. So I'm highlighting that for people who are listening because that's been a huge thing for us too. The rhythms you talked about, those are very similar for us. And it is life to our family. It is vitality to us as believers, as a husband and wife. So it's so, so important. And I want to close with a question because what you're talking about is the topic of your podcast, right? You and your husband do a podcast. Can you tell us?
Yes, we do. It's called the In Between Podcast, a play on our last name, M. So we talk about marriage, parenting, faith, and everything in between. And a quick elevator pitch would be, we give you the tools to be able to build a family and marriage that you love. So we've been doing it for 4 years now. And it's been something talking about different seasons of ministry. So when we were in Nashville, we weren't in church ministry together. My husband was working for a Christian publishing company and I was at home with the kids. And we've always been in church ministry together since we've been engaged. So it was really a time where I was seeking God of like, what is my role? What can I do? Kind of a little bit of identity crisis, if I'm being honest, of this is what I knew myself as, but I don't have that title. I don't have that natural environment anymore of, making friends and all of that. So what am I supposed to do?
Yeah.
And we prayed for a long time. It's not like I prayed that and God was like, start a podcast. Okay. Then we prayed that for about 3 years and, just walked out daily of asking and don't have anything. Okay. I'm just going to do what I'm continuing to do, serve in church and serve in our neighborhood. And this came out of a time where Daniel was speaking at a conference and they just asked us to do a Facebook Live together just to get to know us as a couple. And after we were done, the lady who was hosting it was like, y'all need to do this more often. Like, you have such a great chemistry together. This would be something I think would be really fun and beneficial for others. We went home that night and just prayed about hey, are we supposed to do Facebook Lives all the time? And then Daniel had a thought hey, I know how to start a podcast. He hosted one before. He's like, do you want to do a podcast together? And I didn't even listen to podcasts before. I'm like, I don't know what that means. And so he's like, hey, just listen to a couple podcasts. See if this is something that you would love to do. And that's kind of how we started. And the interesting thing, Christine, I will say is that as a kid, I always got in trouble for speaking. I was too loud. I was too opinionated, talked too much. And I saw that as a negative thing because it was always written in my report card. My parents said I was always too much. Like, can you be quiet, please? Like, we just need just a moment to hear ourselves think. So I used to hide that, oh no, I can't do that. That's not a good thing. But God has used this and many other circumstances just to be like, no, that's the calling I had on your life.
Wow. Like,
this is what you're supposed to be doing.
That's
so
amazing.
Walk in it.
That is amazing. And honestly, as we were talking, as we were having this conversation, I thought, I wish that the listeners could ask questions of you right now, because there's so many parenting questions we want to ask, but then we can say, okay, this is just, we've dipped our toe in the water. Now go over to Christina and Daniel's podcast and dig into the archives and subscribe and listen to her, because you have given us so many nuggets of wisdom, but there's a whole treasure trove of them over there on your podcast. So I'm going to link to y'all's podcast in the show notes.
Thank you.
Everybody just needs to migrate right over there and hit subscribe and learn from Christina and Daniel. So thanks so much for joining me, Christina. This was so fun to have this conversation, and I just loved getting to chat with you.
Yeah, me too, Christine. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thanks so much for listening to By Faith Friends. Before you go, I want to remind you that registration for Lifeway Women's online Bible study of my Matthew study, Seek First the Kingdom, is happening right now. If you register, you get free teaching videos in your email once a week that prepare you for the week's study in the workbook. You can do the study as an individual or with your small group, but you need to know that the videos start rolling out on April 21st, so now is your time to register. I've put a link in my show notes, or you can head to lifeway.com/seekfirst to register today. Join me next week on By Faith as I talk with my friend, Mandy Post, about church planting and being a pastor's wife in Ireland. Mandy and her family have served in Ireland for almost 2 decades. So this is an incredibly insightful conversation about working cross-culturally for the long haul. Until then, friends, have a great week and keep walking forward by faith.